Right now, our regular visit with the Motley Fool. Last time we did this segment in late July, it was all about the new record highs on Wall Street. Since then, well, let's just say it's been a long summer. Parts of my fantasy portfolio will attest to that. The housing market and credit problems didn't help. Neither did the recalls on several products made in China. We'll talk about all of that. But there were some bright spots. David Gardner is with us again from Fool headquarters in Virginia. If you have questions for the co-founder of The Motley Fool about the wild summer, principles of investing, trends, or how to get started, give us a call, 800-989-8255. You can also reach us by email at talk@npr.org. You can also send us comments on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Hey, David.
I hope you're having a glorious September, Neil.
I hope a more glorious September than I did in August. Summer is supposed to be quiet on Wall Street. What happened?
Well, I think what happened is that the market is worried about the destabilizing effects of mortgage loans that may never be repaid. And you know, anytime you start messing with an important part of the fabric of our economy, you start tearing at it a little bit. Everybody wonders, is this a short-term phenomenon? Think back to 1997, the Asian contagion, the Thai baht had failed, the Dow dropped 7% in a single day, the market had a horrible summer. But by 1998, it was forgotten, and we had four more wonderful years for the stock market. Or is this a more important problem that will draw itself out over time? And the constant short-term speculation about the long-term meaning of this mortgage destabilization that's happening right now is really what the debate's about, and hence the volatility.
It also seems to be about what the Federal Reserve and its new chairman are going to do in their first crisis. And again, there are now a lot of people expecting another big rate cut on September 18th.
And I think that that's appropriate. I think that they should be expecting that, and I think it will happen. The market expects that it will happen. If it doesn't happen, the market would swoon further. I'm pretty confident about that. But I think that the Fed generally understands. They get to see a lot of the numbers and make decisions, I think, generally guided by good, sound economics. That's been true for a couple decades. And the market will always be volatile. We've seen that. We know it. It'll be volatile 2 years from now. It'll drop 10% for reasons you and I can't predict today. But I think we have to remember, in the short term, the market is a crazy man. And if you start paying too much attention, guess what'll happen to you, Neil?
I'll go crazy.
That's the thing.
Well, we're going to get into the fantasy portfolio in later in this broadcast, but we have to first obey our lawyers and tell everyone that neither you nor I will offer advice on whether to buy or sell any particular stock. This is a fantasy portfolio with, believe you me, imaginary money, and I'm a beginner at this, so keep in mind it's all just for fun, not meant to be financial advice, and will not be a recommendation for or against any investment. With that out of the way, you know, all things considered, the fantasy portfolio doesn't look all that bad. If you want to check it, listeners, by the way, it's online at any time. The link is npr.org/blogofthenation. The $9,000 in pretend money was worth about $9,975 at noon today, but I have just three of the nine stocks to thank for that, including Apple, which just made some really big announcements yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I think that Apple is in an interesting place because it's had such a tremendous run. In fact, I'm looking at your portfolio, Neil, and I note that you selected it to outperform on January 19th. That's the way we've written it down here at the Motley Fool of this year. And the stock is up 50% even just since January 19th. So forget all the volatility for a sec. That's been a tremendous performer. Now, my caution for you on Apple is it is a very large company today. And so a lot of things have to click well for it to continue to be a market outperformer. I'm not as excited probably about Apple for new money, but with a position like that, and a lot of your listeners, a lot of Talk of the Nation fans have probably been Apple shareholders for years now. And I think, in general, I like to let those stocks just keep going. At the Motley Fool, we do believe in letting your winners run. Mm-hmm. I think the thing to think about, obviously, there's so much media attention on the iPhone and the price cuts for the iPhone, but I just think we have to remember that Apple is a lot of things, and you can't just take yesterday's headline to be a major barometer or thermometer taking Apple's temperature as a company. I don't really think it's predictive for the stock.
Well, be that as it may, they did reduce their prices on the iPhone. They've reportedly moved 1 million units already, but reducing the price this early has apparently ticked some people off, namely those who paid $200 more for theirs. Is that any animosity likely to have any effect?
Are you one of those people, Neil? I'm curious.
I did not buy the iPhone.
You have not yet sprung.
I can barely make my much more primitive version work.
you know, Peter Lynch told us to buy what you know as investors, and I would suggest you consider an iPhone. It would force you to think a little bit further about the stock. But I do think that these days, technology adoption is just critical. There are so many new technologies. They all come down the pipe, and what was yesterday's hot technology is gone by tomorrow. And so you have to hit your numbers. You have to be able to show that you've adopted in the multi-million units. If you only have hit a million units, let's say, and not to apply this to Apple, but all of a sudden you might be considered not to have really hit it in a sustainable fashion. So what Apple's trying to do right now is it's trying to make its iPhone as accessible as possible so that as many people get it, so that Apple can then point to it, say it's a success, and watch this build on itself. If Apple does not hit the numbers that it internally is clocking, then it will get clocked.
All right. Well, let's see if we can get some listeners in on this conversation. Again, our guest, David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And why don't we start with, this will be Sarah. Sarah's with us from Baltimore.
Hi, Neil. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question, and I'm probably not alone in this. My husband and I've got a Roth IRA, and he's got a 401k, and we've been investing as high as we can to get the matching funds from his employer. And we had chosen a couple of particular stocks. After a while, we said, why don't we just forget about particular ones and go into a managed fund? And we both chose the aggressive fund within our plans. And so we're watching all of this sort of fray happening and wondering if we shouldn't maybe pull out of the aggressive funds and go to the moderately aggressive funds. But we're, by the same token, we're in our early 30s. Although we're, you know, expecting a second child, we're putting a lot of money into this. And so it's really a question as to does it make sense to just stay where we are and eventually it'll balance out by the time we need this money? Or is it a good idea to pull out and do something more moderate, at least for the next couple of years?
Considering the volatility, is that what your concern is?
Sorry?
Considering the volatility of the markets, is that what
you're...
Exactly.
All right. With the aggressive fund, I know a lot of the allocation, at least when we started it, was in the housing market. And at one point, I had actually only two different funds, and one of them was specifically housing. And thankfully, we had pulled out of that before, I guess, the real volatility there happened.
Well, let's get a response from David Gardner.
Well, I think that a natural mistake to make is to look backwards and draw conclusions from what's already just happened and then change the course of the strategy you or your financial planner may have set for yourself. So I don't think you should spend too much time looking in the rearview mirror and saying, okay, now that affects where we should be driving to. With that said, I would hope that you have chosen well with your – I don't know what the fund is. I don't know what your annual expense ratio for that fund is. That's just the percent of the money you have invested that is being siphoned off every year to pay the fees of the fund managers. So I think we should all know the annual expense ratio of our funds. And if that number is in excess of 1%, I would suggest you probably can find some better funds. Now, with that said, traditional financial planning will tell you, and it's right, that if you are younger, in your 30s, you're investing for 50-plus years, it makes a lot of sense to have a significant portion, I would say a third or more, of your investments in aggressive, that is stock market, usually smaller cap or growth stocks. Because while they will be more volatile, and so it'll throw us off psychologically when we have a month like we've just had, it's the right decision to stay with, because you're not investing for a month. You're investing for 50 years. And
right.
So from my standpoint, I wouldn't worry too much about what's already just happened.
Oh, those kids will take care of you when they're older. Don't worry about this, Sarah.
Have more.
Deep breath. Right. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Sarah. Let me get on to there's another big financial story that's been running since you guys were on vacation. Don't go on vacation again. This is the product recall on toys made in China. Mattel is the name that gets associated with all of this. If you're the Mattel company, are you committing a corporate harakiri?
Well, I think that Mattel has, from our standpoint, not been an attractive stock for some time now. Actually, on Motley Fool Caps, which rates over 5,000 stocks, Mattel is a one-star stock. That star rating is based on the sentiment of the smartest minds picking stocks online. That is, if you do well, we overweight your opinion when you give us new opinions. So if you tell us that you don't like Mattel and you're really highly rated, that will change the star rating. Mattel is a one-star stock. So it already was, even before the 20% or so drop that it's had over the last 6 months. This is a difficult company because it's trying to manage so many different brands, so many different products. And while it is a robust name that we all recognize from our childhood, I just think that there are better stocks out there if you actually have some savings and want to deploy it into something that will grow over time. I think Hasbro, an American company, is a little bit better managed. That is one of the stocks that I personally favor. Your mileage may vary. But for the most part, as you've seen, Neil, all of these companies have somewhat been painted into a corner by their reliance on Chinese manufacturing and the lower standards over there, and that's something that's going to have to be solved.
And Hasbro doesn't strike me as exactly a small toy manufacturer. Are there more agile companies now ready to leap in and take advantage of Mattel's problems?
Well, you know, I this is really, for the most part, at a mass level, this is a fairly consolidated industry. So really, you just only have a few players. There are lots of little niche providers, and I'm sure blonde wood toys that have no paint on them might be hot this holiday season because for this reason. So I think there is an opportunity for your small business providing kind of handmade or handcrafted toys. This might be a great year for you. But when we still talk about the mass mainstream level, we're talking about billions of dollars of purchases. And really, these are the companies that are the players.
Until we find out that varnish causes the yaws or something. Anyway, we're talking with David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another listener on the line. This is Ann with us from Cleveland.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about how to choose a financial planner. My husband and I are both in our late 40s, and we are currently looking for a financial planner. What criteria should we use, or how do we go about finding someone?
Good question. Because a lot of these planners, you can find them, but they say, and we need at least $150,000 or $500,000 to play with.
Correct.
That's right. That's right. And so that's the first hurdle for a lot of us. But there are also a lot of people in this nation today who do have that. And we tend to get that way as we get older in our aging society. People who are saving and making good decisions do have that much money. So a few thoughts for you. First of all, in terms of gathering some references, there's no substitute for other people that you respect in your professional life who are using financial planners and are having good experiences with them. So lobbing the question out there to your doctor, to your lawyer, to other people in your life that you think might have financial planners and finding out somebody that they've enjoyed using is a great initial way to find somebody. There's also a website, NAPFA.org. It's the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and you can scan that site for financial planners in your area. The final thing, I mean, there's a lot more to say on this, and obviously the Motley Fool is focused on this subject far more than I can do in 60 seconds on radio, but I will tell you that it's awfully helpful for us in life to make sure we're working with somebody and we know how that person's being paid. A lot of people enter financial planning relationships or advisory relationships and they don't realize that the person providing them the advice is also being paid to sell them certain funds that are offered by that person's company and where they're getting a commission in a way that you're not necessarily discovering until maybe a few years later as you look over your underperforming funds and wondering what happened. And then often people start to seek out the Motley Fool and say, I was burned and now I need to make better decisions because so just make sure that you understand the payment conditions or the financial relationship between you and your planner.
So you would suggest finding someone who is not affiliated with any particular organization.
And I would suggest finding somebody who is fee-only, not fee-based. These are different terms used by the industry, but when you find somebody who's fee-only, you are paying that person a flat fee directly for their financial advice. You are not entering into a relationship where that person may be making money in other ways that you're not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ann, good luck.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, bye-bye. And let's see, probably have time for one more. This is Steve. Steve from Jacksonville in Florida.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I just had
Steve.
Question about retirement planning. Do you prefer, like, individual bonds for that side of the portfolio or bond funds?
You know, I really prefer bond funds for most of us because bond funds give us a wide diversity across lots of different bonds. And usually you should be looking for bond funds. We talked earlier about that expense ratio. Again, the percentage of your assets, you're paying the fund managers to run the fund. Bond funds are pretty thin. That is low fee, and that's good. You should be seeking those out, maybe a quarter of a percent per year. I really like a lot of the funds from Vanguard, for example, fit that. But any low fee provider, I mean, for the most part, there's not a lot of expertise necessarily being thrown at this. They're buying lots of bonds. It's almost kind of a commodity action they're taking on your behalf, giving you diversity, buying lots of stuff themselves. So I don't think you need to be paying them a lot in advisory fees. I just think it's more convenient for a lot of us, the bond funds.
Great. And do you still like index funds or managed funds?
Steve, absolutely we like index funds. We certainly spend time looking for good managed funds, too. It's not that the index fund is the only answer. For most of us, it's a good answer. If you don't have time, if this isn't going to be your hobby, managing your investments, which it is for me, but a lot of us aren't that focused on it, an index fund just gets you the entire market, and it gets you the average, whether you're buying a market of bonds or stocks or a given sector. It will give you the return, the average return of that sector, usually for a much lower fee. So if you're going to buy a managed fund, we always say at The Motley Fool, darn it, make sure that that managed fund exceeds the average, because you paid extra. You could have just gotten the average at a very low fee. So I don't think there's one answer there, but at least maybe that frames it up for you.
Steve, thanks very much for the call. Good luck. And before we let you go, David Gardner, I have to ask, this is your hobby? Is that what you tell the IRS?
Well, let me say, to the extent I consider myself an amateur in the true sense of the term. I know you're familiar with etymology, Neil, having taken 5 years of Latin yourself. And so you know that an amateur is somebody who loves what they do. And that absolutely describes my approach to not just stock market investing, but to life.
David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool and a rank amateur. David, thanks very much. We'll talk to you again next month.
Fool on.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.